Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
You're listening to a man whose work is never done.
In a job like yours, even when it's finished, there's always one more thing to do.
And his job is to make your job easier.
It's a very difficult job, and the only way to get through it is we all work together as a team. That means you do everything I say.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today. 800-531-3815, toll free coast to coast. I'm excited. If you just tuned in, I'm at the Kiplinger, in the Kiplinger building. I'm visiting with the folks here at Kiplinger. It's their 80th anniversary this month, and a little bit later in the month, I think it's around the 29th or so, I get Knight Kiplinger to give us the exact date, but he's here with us now. Now he's the editor-in-chief, the grandson of the founder, Mr. Willard Kiplinger, and a good friend of ours and a longtime member of our Brain Trust. Knight Kiplinger, welcome back to the show.
Jim, it's always a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. It's great to have you here. It's great for me to be here in your building. It's a lot of fun. Thank you for the hospitality. It's exciting. You and I have done this show several times, but we've never done it face-to-face.
That's right, usually on the telephone.
Yeah.
Here we are in Washington, D.C., about two blocks from the White House,
yeah.
One block from the World Bank, really at the center of a lot of the global policymaking of the big economy. But here to talk about the small economy, which in the aggregate is the biggest economy of all, small business.
That's exactly right. Thank you for saying that. No question about it. As you probably know, the U.S. economy is trillion, and small businesses account for over half of that.
That's amazing.
Yeah, isn't that something? And, you know, a lot of people just don't realize that. But anyway, I want to talk to you about Kiplinger. First, I want to congratulate you and your company and your employees and your customers on 80 years in the business. That's an incredible accomplishment for a small business. And I know you guys are not tiny, but you're still a small business, family-owned primarily with some employment, some employee participation. And so congratulations.
Thank you very much, Jim. Every business starts out as a small business. Some get very big. They become giant corporations. They go public. But some small businesses stay small or stay medium-sized out of choice. They don't want the impersonality and the bureaucracy of a large business. And I think that defines the vision of our founder, my grandfather, my father, whom you're going to talk to later in the show, I understand, and myself today. This business was founded in 1920 as a small Washington information agency, information bureau, giving intelligence and analysis to a few business clients. Started out with a few bank clients, as a matter of fact. And it started out with a staff of four or five young men who were all journalists and business analysts who decided that instead of writing for a public audience by publishing in a newspaper or magazine, they would publish reports and bulletins and then a weekly newsletter for all of their clients, telling them what's happening in Washington that would have bearing on their business, whether large or small.
Out across, these are customers across the country.
That's right. Our readership today includes an amazing cross-section of people in management. And I say management rather than business because a lot of our clients are in nonprofit management. Mm-hmm. They're college presidents, labor union officials, museum executives, whatever. But the lion's share of our clients are people in the management of businesses, everything from the small-town hardware stores to the Fortune 50. And these people all need the same sort of thing from us. They need straight-ahead judgments on what's likely to happen. We don't editorialize. We don't prescribe policy. We don't praise or condemn what is going on in Washington or state capitals. But we try to tell our subscribers what's likely to happen in government regulation, legislation, interest rates, inflation, business costs, human resources regulations, so they can make intelligent plans based on what's coming down the pike that's going to impact them. We did that in 1923 when the Kiplinger Letter was founded. We're still doing it today for over 200,000 weekly subscribers.
Well, and the thing is the need for the information has only increased. The delivery methods have changed, though. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later on in our visit. What I want to talk about for just a few minutes is your third generation management.
Yes.
Tell us, there are a lot of third-generation listeners right now out there. And I'd like you to talk to us a little bit about that.
Family succession planning in a closely held business is very, very tricky. You can't just wait until a crisis forces a succession plan upon a business. You have to think about it early. Who's going to lead the business? Who's going to own the business? And the reason that most small businesses, especially family businesses, don't survive to the second generation, let alone the third, as ours has, is that they really don't do enough planning. And the planning is psychological. It's business planning. It's also the financial planning. How will estate taxes on the value of the business be covered?
Absolutely. And that's a big deal for farming families, for small businesses all across the country, and those who start as small as you say and have gotten a little bit bigger. Knight, stand by. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be right back with Knight Kipler, ladies and gentlemen, the heir apparent to, I should say, the third generation editor-in-chief of the Kiplinger Editors. It's 20 till. Stay with us. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, celebrating the 80th anniversary of the Kiplinger Letter. Knight Kiplinger is with us. He's the editor-in-chief and the grandson of the founder of this company, this outstanding small business company in the publishing industry, which is no mean feat, by the way. I can tell you that in my little experience as a publisher in my small way. But I want to get back, Knight, and by the way, happy anniversary.
Thank you very much, Jim.
Very proud of you. I know that means a lot to you and your family and to your employees and to your customers. You were talking to us I was asking you about being a third-generation manager, and you were giving us some advice to the other heir apparents out there, and you were talking about the importance of the planning, the different kinds of planning. Would you delve into those three a little bit more?
Succession planning in a small business, especially in a family business, requires periodic meetings among all the key players to talk about the psychology of succession management, about the financial planning aspects of it, how the key employees outside the ownership group relate to the process. And a lot of families talk about everything except succession planning in a family business.
Why is that?
I think it's because the founder...
In denial? You think the founder's in denial? Sometimes that happens.
Some founders think they're immortal.
Mm-hmm. I've met those guys.
They think they're going to live forever, and they also think that their ideas are always going to be the best ideas. They think they're always going to be with the times, in step with the market, when in fact they might not be in step with the market as much as some of the younger managers of the company, both family members and non-family members. It's very hard for founders to let go. My grandfather, W.M. Kiplinger, never did retire from the company. His health deteriorated when he was in his early 70s, and sadly he was retired by death. Although he had effectively ceded control of the company to his son, my father, Austin Kiplinger, well before that. It's the rare founder who can let go.
It is rare.
And happily, my father, a second-generation leader of this company, has been a model in this regard. While he still comes into the office every day, he is more active on civic affairs and private affairs in the office. He is there for good counsel, for guidance, but he knows that the daily running of the company requires more detailed attention and time focused on our management issues than he, in his mid-80s, wishes to devote to it.
It's really a model transition scenario, especially, you know, when he got control of the company, things weren't that different from 5 years before he took it and 5 years after. But we're in the 21st century now. And so things are a lot different. And that's one of the problems I think a lot of the founders have is that they're really not in, many of them are not in tune with what's going on in their industry as much as they should be with taking the company into the next generation in the next century.
That's quite true. You know that there are a lot of things conspiring against keeping a closely held business in a family. Estate taxes are one of them.
Which is all part of the planning, isn't it?
That's right. Closely held businesses should have periodic appraisals of the business. So if they are hit with a success succession emergency all of a sudden. If the founder and majority owner of the business dies suddenly, the IRS is going to come in and they're going to put a value on the business, and it often might be surprisingly high. Good planning requires planning for the estate taxes. That means a lot of life insurance.
Mm-hmm. The funding mechanism.
That's right. It also means living simply and setting aside enough capital for those estate taxes if you want to keep the business in the family. Now, some small business owners don't. Some heirs don't wish to keep it in the family. When the founder dies, they engage a good business broker to find a buyer for their business. They get a good appraisal, and the business is sold. Sometimes the family members stay with the new ownership continuity management. Sometimes they leave. But if you want to keep a business in your family, you have to plan for those estate taxes. And even though Congress is raising the threshold for estate taxation in steps up over $3 million by the end of this decade, there are a lot of small, medium-sized businesses that are worth at least that or more, and there will be an estate tax bill.
But the owners don't know it, many of them.
They don't.
They don't realize that the land that mom and pop bought or grandma and grandma bought for a little of nothing back in the 40s is now worth millions of dollars. They don't realize that. They haven't thought about the fact. I mean, I know they've seen their balance sheet, but they didn't realize that they've got all this inventory, they've got all these improvements. And as you say, the IRS is going to come in and evaluate it. If they don't, if they're not prepared for that, then, and sometimes not, the business is not worth as much on the market as it is to the family. To create income and to have for those people to have a place to be and it's important to them personally.
That's really quite true. After you get an appraisal of your business and you figure out if there will be an estate tax liability, state or federal, then you have to decide how you're going to meet that liability. It can be through life insurance, or you can start saving some of the earnings of your business each year, retaining more earnings, and building a pool of capital that's available for estate taxation. Or, if you want to keep the business in the family and the estate tax bill comes due, you can borrow against the business and gradually pay off that estate tax bill over the next several years of earnings. There are a lot of different ways to do it, but the important thing is to think about it and to plan for it.
You got to do that and take it in steps, right? I mean, you can just get started. Start out with just the process of educating yourself on what has to happen. This doesn't have to be something you do in 30 days. I mean, this is really a long-term process, isn't it?
That's right. And if you founded your business with a few partners, you should have a buy-sell agreement with those partners.
You got to have that. Exactly. Nat Kiplinger, stand by. We're going to take a quick break, folks. We'll be right back with our good friend, Nat Kiplinger, editor-in-chief of the Kiplinger Editors. And we're helping them celebrate their 80th anniversary. We'll be right back. Nat's got some more words of wisdom for us right after these messages. It's 10 Tales. Stay with us. We're back at 7 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're in the Kiplinger Building, ladies and gentlemen, on H Street in Washington, D.C., our nation's capital. It's a couple of blocks from the White House and a block or so away from the World Bank, right here in the center of everything in Washington, D.C., and it's exciting for me to be here. Knight, I want to thank you so much for the hospitality you guys have shown me and for the resource that you and your organization have been to us over the years, starting out with Gary Matthews and you've been on the show several times. Joan, who's sitting here with us today and who's with us earlier in the hour, has just been a stalwart supporter. We appreciate you, her time very much and the information. As you know, I was a subscriber to Kiplinger's letter many, many years ago. I've been reading it. I used to go in as a salesman. Many years ago, I'd go into my customers' offices and read the Kiplinger letter in their waiting rooms. And so I knew about you guys many, many years ago.
Oh, thank you, Jim. Small business managers are really a bulwark of our subscriber base all over America. When I travel around the country, I meet small business men and women in many fields, and they use the Kiplinger letter each week to help them plan, and we're very honored by their patronage.
And that's Kiplinger.com, by the way, folks. I encourage you to check it out, not only for subscription information, but you can subscribe there, and I think they still have a 30-day free trial, but also there's information there that's not based on subscription that you can get that Kiplinger makes available. So check that out. Knight, talk to us about employees. They're very important to your success, aren't they?
Our company. company is 8 decades old, and I think the key to our longevity is honoring our employees, giving them a supportive environment for working, and most importantly, sharing the fruits of our success with our employees. My grandfather was a pioneer of employee profit sharing. When the profits were there, he shared them in equal percentages with every employee, from the loading dock to the executive suite.
It was almost unheard of back in those days, early half of the 20th century.
It really was. He, of course, was a great champion of capitalism, but he believed in sort of a communal capitalism in which the success of a business is assumed to be broadly shared by everybody in the company, not just a few hotshots at the top. He believed in employee ownership, and he gave, not sold through an ESOP, but gave one-third of this company to his employees.
Wow.
Well before his death. In the 1950s, he created a stock ownership trust, even before employee stock ownership plans or ESOPs existed. And today, because we occasionally buy stock back from the employee stock trust as employees retire from the company and leave and they cash out of the plan, even today about 22% of our company is owned collectively by our employees.
Is it any wonder, ladies and gentlemen, that they're still around in this really tough industry called publishing after all these years? And I think that's the key, folks, right there, those words of wisdom from Knight. Now let's change subjects as we go to the end of our visit. I'd like for you to give us some of your thoughts on the economy, whatever you're thinking of right now that you'd like to make sure that you leave us with.
It's pretty clear that the economy is on the mend. Remember, the economy only contracted briefly for barely 3 quarters, about a year and a half ago.
And we almost had to hunt for that, didn't we?
That's right. So in terms of the definition of a recession, we barely made one 2 years ago. But the growth since then has been on the sluggish side until quite recently, when growth has been accelerating. We know that business overspent on capital goods, especially technology goods in the late 90s.
Building for Y2K.
Exactly. That and, of course, the giddy euphoria over the dot-com boom. Then business contracted its spending, not just capital spending, but the softer spending of travel and entertainment and advertising and promotion. But that's just about run its course. A lot of businesses say we've got to get back to a normal level of spending. And that's why business spending is going to be the star of the economy over the next year or two. The consumer's going to hold up okay, but businesses are now loosening their purse strings, beginning to spend on office equipment, on vehicles, on higher advertising spending.
Hopefully the direct expensing that they got in the tax cut this summer is going to help that.
It sure will.
Increasing from $25,000 direct expensing up to $100,000. I got about 30 seconds. Last thoughts.
American business is incredibly resilient, incredibly adaptive, more so than business in Europe and Asia. We adjust our course, we trim our sails, we set a new course, and over time, we prosper.
Well said. Great words from you. Knight, again, Kiplinger's meant a lot to me in my career, having read your letters for many years, but you've been a lot to me and to my audience over the last almost 6 years I've been on the air. And you guys have been with me over 5 altogether on a regular basis. We've covered the letter. And I just want you to know that from me and my organization and from all of our folks out there listening to us, I want to thank you for what Kiplinger has meant to all of us over the last 80 years.
Thank you very much, Jim.
Knight Kiplinger, ladies and gentlemen, the editor-in-chief of Kiplinger Letters. Got to go for this hour, actually, and I'll be right back. I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to stay right here at Kiplinger. I got Ted Miller and Austin Kiplinger in the next hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.